97.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. A beautiful Monday. Start of Thanksgiving week. Start of Iron Bowl week. And, boy, Auburn football couldn't be feeling a whole lot better heading in than after that unbelievable finish and win on Saturday night at Jordan-Hare Stadium. A four-overtime thriller, 43-41 over Texas A&M. And we've got a huge matchup coming up tonight in college basketball. Your fourth or third, depending on which poll you're looking at, ranked Auburn Tigers taking on the number 5 Iowa State Cyclones out in Hawaii, out in Maui at 8 o'clock our time. It will be 4 o'clock in Hawaii, as a huge matchup there between Auburn and Iowa State, the start of an unbelievable stretch for this Auburn basketball team, who could play Iowa State, North Carolina, and UConn over the next 3 days, and then they'll turn around and Duke is their next ball game at Cameron. So, I mean, an unbelievable stretch here for Auburn basketball. So, I mean, there is so much to talk about. Again, I said it Friday as we were winding things down, Don and I on Friday. I said, this is one of those weekends where there aren't that many marquee games. I mean, the Ohio State-Indiana game was the biggest ranked matchup, and that was not a matchup at all. Ohio State winning that ball game comfortably. Indiana scoring late to cut it to a 23-point win. And that had a lot of people early on going, well, that'll do it for Indiana. Maybe not. Not after you saw all the results of the rest of the day. Tough day for the Southeastern Conference. Thinking, you know, with the teams that were lobbying strength of schedule and that they should be able to get into the college football group of 12 playoff, and because you saw it throughout the day. I mean, the first one to fall was the Ole Miss Rebels to the Florida Gators. How about the Gators down the stretch? I mean, they have really played well after all the concerns about Billy Napier. The Gators knock off LSU and Ole Miss, and now they have Florida State. They have a chance to have a 7-5 season when it appeared early on after they lost to Texas A&M that this may be a team that only won 3 or 4 ball games, and would Billy Napier even be around by the end of November? But they knock off Ole Miss to hand the Rebels their third loss, and this supposed to be the best team in Ole Miss history. It's not going to go down as that. It's going to go down as one of the bigger disappointments in Ole Miss history, as they fall to 8-3 after playing a schedule that they won their toughest game. Ole Miss beat Georgia, but you know, they lost at LSU. They lose at South Carolina, and they lose at Florida. So Ole Miss 8-3 as they get ready for the Egg Bowl coming up on Friday. But then Saturday night, while Auburn and Texas A&M were getting underway, it almost seemed to go unnoticed because of the, especially in the press box, I'll say this, at Jordan-Hare Stadium. There weren't a lot of people paying attention to the Alabama-Oklahoma game. A lot of folks didn't think there was any reason to pay any attention to the Alabama-Oklahoma game. Alabama, a huge favorite going in to that ball game in Norman against a 1-5 Oklahoma team in SEC play. And, you know, Alabama kicks a field goal, goes up 3-0. Oklahoma misses a chip shot field goal. And I didn't see many people that were even paying attention, as it's 3-3 going to halftime. But when it was 17-3, I looked back, and as Texas A&M is coming back, here comes, you know, Oklahoma stretching lead, and Jalen. I looked and saw Jalen Milroe's stats in the middle of the third quarter. He's like 3 for 9 with a couple of interceptions. I'm like, what is going on in Norman, Oklahoma? So that one continues, and Oklahoma shocks Alabama 24-3. Is Alabama out of the playoff picture? I don't know if they are. I mean, because when you look at the polls that come out, Alabama's ranked 13. So they're the highest ranked 3-loss team. Although, you know, their losses have now come to 2 6-5 teams. Oklahoma with the win is now 6-5. Vandy with their loss this past week in Baton Rouge is now 6-5. So I mean, it's been tough for Alabama on the road. They're unbeaten at home, and of course their other loss came in Knoxville. But it's crazy, isn't it, now that Oklahoma and Vandy both swept the state of Alabama, Auburn and Alabama. But Auburn. So then Texas A&M was in position, and they still are in position to go to the SEC championship game. But it appears the only way Texas A&M's getting into the playoff is if they win the conference championship game. They would have to beat Texas to get in. Then they'd have to win the conference championship game to be in the playoff. But the SEC is in an odd situation now, because it was, you know, there was lobbying to get 5 SEC teams in. I'm not sure if the SEC is going to get 4 in now. So because you have so many 3-loss teams in the SEC, and I will not be shocked at all if Texas A&M beats Texas this week, since the game's in College Station. It is just crazy to look at this now as we head into the final week of the regular season. The Texas A&M game is a Saturday game. We've got 2 Friday games with the Egg Bowl and Georgia Tech on Friday. But if Texas A&M beats Texas, then your standings, I mean, right now, Texas is the only 1-loss team in the conference, and they have that just 1-loss period, which came to Ole Miss. But Georgia is a 2-loss team. They're 9-2, and they've got Georgia Tech this weekend. Georgia is in the SEC championship game, and Tennessee appears to be in good shape if they beat Vandy this coming Saturday. But A&M, like I said, I think the only way they're in is if they win the conference championship. South Carolina may be the team with the best argument among the 3-loss teams in the SEC. I mean, look how close Carolina has been to being a 10-1 team right now. They lost that LSU game and in a tough fashion, and then I didn't leave Brian enough room to climb in. I think Dan's on his way as well, we're underway here at Franklin Tire on the start of this Thanksgiving week. But crazy looking at all the results from this past week, and you know, now the question isn't, you know, who's a shoe-in. We thought that any SEC team that finished in the top 3 or 4 of the conference standings, Brian, was going to be for sure in. I don't know if that's the case anymore. I mean, the SEC may be fortunate to get 3 in.
Yeah, and it's interesting because a team will lose and they're out, and then more teams lose and that team that was out could be back in.
So. It has been a wild, wild season. And it continued again on Saturday. We're just getting underway. I just jumped right in and started talking because I was here, early on. Brian making his way in. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Dan's been all over the place, all over the country, and was in Alaska. And I believe he is headed in. We'll see Dan before too long. We'd love for you to join us. We are coming to you from Franklin Tire. And this is a place I think of most holiday seasons because there's a lot of travel. If you're going to be on the road, you want to make sure your vehicle is in as good running shape as possible. I came in, I had one of those typical things. It's like I was hearing something that I shouldn't hear. Of course, when I got here, I told Will, I can't hear it anymore. You know how it is sometimes when you're taking the car in. But, I mean, they can take care of any, you know, anything that you need. But you want to make sure that everything's in good shape. If you're going to be on the road, a ton of traffic this Thanksgiving, as always. So make sure you stop by here at Franklin. Now, they're open through Wednesday this week. Then they're taking off the rest of the week for Thanksgiving. So if you have something, you can come by here for the next couple of days. Yeah. They're here till 6 today and then until 5:30 on Tuesday and Wednesday. It's Bill, Brian, Matthews. Dan is on his way. Brian, what a show that was Saturday night. And, I mean, it has to be just such a relief to finally, I mean, Auburn finally wins one of those coulda, woulda, shoulda type ball games.
Yes, they've had a few of those, and they needed
too many
one.
Of those.
Yeah. But it was a great atmosphere. Even, you know, before there was a win or loss, you just have to give this Auburn fan base so much credit for everything they've been through for the last 4 or 5 plus years. They're showing up to a big night game at Jordan-Hare Stadium and providing a great atmosphere, and we're a big part, I think, of Auburn being able to pull that out. And it was a terrific game. It wasn't a perfectly played game. You know, Auburn got off to that incredible start. Then Texas A&M had an incredible comeback. And then Auburn fought back and took the lead. And then Texas A&M came back and took the lead. And then Auburn managed to make that drive, the drive they haven't made all season long, to tie it up and to send it into overtime.
And, I mean, it was a situation where you weren't sure if Auburn was even going to get it back. They had or not. They get the ball with around –
they went, was it a three and out?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
There was a three and out, and if A&M's able to convert a first down or two, but they had the bad snap, and then Auburn uses their timeouts and was able to get the ball back, and it took a fourth and two conversion on the big run by Peyton to keep that drive alive.
Big scramble there, found some running room, and did an incredible job to get that first down and to make a play with the game on the line, and then got down there. Boy, I mean, they had some opportunities. Some penalties really kept them from
three false starts on that drive.
Yeah, but Ian Vachon.
Yeah, Vachon. I mean,
just what? Yeah, clutch.
That was scary. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, he didn't show any nerves, but boy, everybody was holding their breath because he had badly missed a 41-yard field goal a little earlier. And, I mean, here it is. The game, the opportunity to send the game to overtime is on the line for him to make that field goal. He drilled it right down the middle.
He did. That was a big-time kick. And then you get into overtime and just back and forth. And great, great catch by Keandre Lambert Smith. I thought it was
a really good throw by Peyton, because you had to get it up.
Yep.
Had to get it up high. If he didn't, I heard some people going, "Hell, the pass was too high." If the pass isn't that high, it's incomplete, or it's going to be intercepted or knocked down.
The interesting thing to me today was Eufries talked about that play, and he said that they run that play all the time in practice, and that Keandre Lambert Smith probably made that catch 8 or 9 times.
It's funny now. Peyton, when talking with us, Peyton said, "Well, They did something a little different on that play. They usually don't have Jarquez in and going in motion, but they added that to it. But he still had the same reads, and his first read was Cam. And he thought Cam was going out, but he cut in, and he was able to then," he said, "he knew where Keandre was going to be and knew he needed to get it up high enough. And Keandre made that great catch."
Big-time play. And, man, that
– And then Texas A&M – dropped.
Yeah, it was a drop.
Yeah, what would have been the catch that would have sent it to the fifth overtime?
To me, that's the —
hey, Dan.
Hey guys, am I plugged in? Are you hearing me?
Yeah, we got you.
All right, so yeah, to me the most — there we go. To me the most disappointing part of the yeah. Well, no, I think I'm good to go now. Yeah. Well, I'm watching the levels. So, thank you, Brian. You're where you should be. You're good.
This is me.
So, Yeah, I think the one disappointing thing is that it didn't end on a really triumphant play for Auburn. It was kind of a mistake
that's
by
right.
A&M, but I mean, that's, you know, you're nitpicking.
80-something thousand people would argue that.
You're
they go, that's just fine.
Well, no, but you're nitpicking.
It ended on a triumph. It was a triumphant end because it was a win.
It's a triumph for Auburn, but the fact that it's sort of an unforced error by A&M there at the end, it's a drop. It's not a pass breakup. It's a play that's the one. If it's even a little bit sour about that would be, but I mean, it's all told considering Auburn hasn't beaten a ranked opponent since Bo Nix was the quarterback and Brian Harsin was the head coach, and Auburn had, was it 14, 15 straight losses to teams ranked in the top 25. That's the streak I believe that snapped. When Auburn beats Texas A&M, I mean, yeah, you can't.
It's been since 2021, Ole Miss at home.
Yeah, I mean, it was pre-Halloween 2021, the last time Auburn beat a team ranked in the top 25. And so, yeah, I mean, when you go 3+ years with that kind of drought, style points can be.
Yeah, you'll take it, and Auburn's beaten itself enough.
Yeah.
In some of these losses, that it's like it's okay for another team to not take advantage when they have an opportunity I mean, man, the scene afterward was just crazy. Brian, I loved your comment in your Monday musings. So Brian got jostled a little bit, and apparently the phone got knocked.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, but that's okay. Auburn to be glad to send that $100,000 to Texas A&M. Go, thank you very much.
And I, you know, I think everyone should read what Brian had to say. I am on the other side of this.
Oh,
and
no.
I have no problem with that. And it's completely for safety concerns. There have been catastrophic injuries. There will be, I think, a catastrophe involving a field storming or a court storming that changes people's minds about this. And I don't want to wait until that happens before I say this is probably something that's not worth the risk.
I understand the joy and the jubilation that there was, the release.
No, and
relief.
If you're someone who's gonna, if you want to wait until the catastrophe happens before you change your mind about it, that's fine. But I think it probably is something at the moment that needs to be phased out of college athletics, field stormings and court stormings. But I mean, I can't deny how special that must have been for the people in the stadium Saturday night.
It was amazing. I mean, the thing is, it needs to stop at the beginning of a season. If it's going on and some people are doing it, then I don't say let's be the ones not to do it.
I mean, there have been a lot of dodged bullets, I would say, in these situations. I mean, Caitlin Clark was this year. Remember the Ohio State fan running on the floor and bumping Caitlin Clark? I mean, what happens when there's a season-ending injury because a fan runs on the field? And I mean, I just, the question of whether or not it's worth the risk to the athletes who could sustain injuries, to the fans and university employees who could sustain injuries, like, I think that's a totally, and if you're on the other side, that's fair too. But I would say, I'm not on the side of it's worth the risk.
I don't think there's any way to stop it.
And yet it doesn't happen in the NFL at all. Like, I mean, the NFL clearly has ways to protect their fields. The NBA has ways to protect their courts.
That's a different fan base.
It really is. That's what I was going to say. There's a different feeling. I think
there's double talk too, because like on one side the conference says they don't want it. On the other side, when it happens, it's all over social media from the conference members.
Right.
Like, I mean, if you don't want this thing to be part of the sport, then you shouldn't be sharing footage of it on your social media platforms. Then you shouldn't be using it in promotional materials. ESPN shouldn't be showing it. If indeed they want to get it out of the sport, it's fair to wonder if they do, because, I mean, you know, the footage from Saturday night is everywhere.
All right, we need to get to our first break. We've got calls holding. Well, I think we're going to unplug and re-plug in because, or else we're going to see Dan hop the table.
No, I got this.
Good to have you back, man.
Hi, everybody.
How was the trip north?
The Troy Trojans are the champions of the Great Alaska Shootout, the 41st instance of that. So it is fun to come back with the hardware, the tusks, the walrus tusks. I don't know if I've shown you.
No.
Oh, I'll show you those during the commercial break. But no, Anchorage is a gorgeous city, a great event. It's a place I've never been before.
I've never been.
Yeah, I don't know if Anchorage is on the, you know, there's not pressing matters that are going to bring me back anytime soon. But I think it was a great opportunity. Really appreciate Troy letting me come along and call some games. And it's good to be home. After I did the math, Bill, I've slept in my own bed for like 15 hours in the last 2 weeks. So I think it'll be nice. it'll be nice to go home and get some and get some meaningful sleep in my own spot.
All right, we'll get to our first break. We'll get your phone calls, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. When we come back from Franklin Tire with the Monday Drive.
At SunSouth, we decided to peg on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 1067.
Achilles tendonitis is often as painful as it sounds. The Orthopedic Clinic is here to help get you back on board. Achilles tendonitis is often as painful as it sounds. The Orthopedic Clinic is here to help get you back on.
Welcome back in. Sorry about that. We had a little had a reconnect there so we could get room for all three of us. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews coming to you from Franklin Tire here on this Monday. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar.
Oh, you can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Let's go ahead and get right to the phones, and Michael is up first. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Brian. Hope you guys have a happy Thanksgiving. I really, really enjoy your show. I really, really enjoyed it last week. My gripe is the trip to Alaska didn't last long enough, so we swing right into a win. Now, granted, this was the 89 Bama game or kick six, but we finally beat a good team for the first time in a couple of years. So Dan swings right into it. It ended on a sourdough, and then we start talking about rushing the field, which I don't agree with, and I agree with his points. But, my God, could we not talk about a big victory, all the commits that shut down their recruiting today, and all the prospects that were there that said they had a blast? I'll hang up and listen to Bill and Brian about my comments. Thanks.
Oh, my. Well,
sorry. I wasn't positive enough after a historic victory because I pointed out that it ended on a drop pass, and we disagree a little bit about the nature of rushing the field. I wish you have a happy Thanksgiving, despite the fact that you apparently only wished it to the two of the three people
I hope we
on
all
this
have
table.
A happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm not going to stop it. Yeah. It's not going to stop me from enjoying my holiday.
Right now. Now, Brian, talk a little bit about, the recruits did seem to have. I mean, how could they not?
Well, they were some of the first ones on the field, I have to say. And, I'm amazed at how well Auburn has recruited. Number one, I'm amazed at how well Auburn has continued to recruit when things have not gone well on the field. And I'm amazed as we get closer and closer, I think it's 9 days now until sign day, that Auburn's still hanging on to their top guys, even though there are a number of schools, trying to flip them, and maybe one or two might still. But so far, so good.
I think Auburn's liable to flip one or two
and
themselves.
They are involved with some other top guys that they may steal from other programs. That's just incredible.
Yeah. It has been. It has been amazing. With Auburn, unable to win the way they expected or, hoped this year, that they've been able to have this kind. And we'll see. I mean, it's 9 days away.
It is. And it's not all about money, because other schools have plenty of money,
right,
too. And there are kids that Auburn's winning recruiting battles against that are taking less money. I mean, not significantly less, but less money to come to Auburn. So this coaching staff deserves a big, big ton of credit for the work they put in recruiting. It's paying off. It'll be a little nerve-wracking, I think, over the last week, just because Auburn is away.
Right.
That means the schools that are hosting home games are going to get some of
these kids
in.
They get the last shot, basically.
You talked about that some today's press conference,
And then, you know, you don't know what's going to happen over those final couple of days when the visits are off and you can talk over the phone. And, you know, sometimes schools can get desperate and try to, you know, throw in a big payout to a certain kid here or there. So there's going to still be some drama here. But mm-hmm. I still expect Auburn, very much expect Auburn to sign a top five or better class come a week from Wednesday.
Yeah, when I upset people like that, I know I'm doing my job.
Let's get back to the phone. 334-321-1390. Tex is up next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, Tex.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Brian. Hey, Debbie Downer's brother, Danny.
sorry about that, Tex.
Just go back to Alaska.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, Tex.
Thank you. As I sit here looking over the lake, I'm much more relaxed and enjoyable, Dan. I prefer to think that the game was won by an unbelievable catch in the back of the end zone by an Auburn receiver.
Oh, absolutely. It came down to a matter of who blinked first, right? Like, if you want, I mean, it was a stare down. I mean, when you get into the new college football overtime rules, that's you know, some of the nature of.
We can get into that again. I'm still not a fan of this.
Bill.
I'm not a fan of the two-point charge. The other thing is,
maybe he's going to call back and take back that Thanksgiving blessing.
No, let me. No, I can't imagine. Well, whatever. But the thing is crazy to me is how the stats count until you get to that.
The stats
count in the first two overtimes, but from the third overtime on, the stats don't count. So Keandre Lambert-Smith did not have another catch.
Is it a 2-point conversion?
It's a 2-point
officially,
conversion.
Which, yeah, doesn't count.
That's what I mean. It shouldn't be.
I liked it before when they just had it at the 25 every time. I know we had a couple.
Yeah,
like
we had
two.
Seven overtime games.
Okay, but it wasn't like we had a whole run of them. You know, that was unusual.
No,
you know?
You're right.
Well, I'll just tell you this, a couple things, Dan. Number one, your approval rating of Anchorage is slightly higher than mine. My son played in the Mat-Su Valley for two summers in a row in the Alaska Collegiate League.
Yeah, but it was never dark then while you were there.
No, it was dark. It may have been dark there for Dan. It wasn't dark there for us. That's what I said.
It wasn't ever dark.
Yeah, never dark. Yeah, I have a picture of him pitching at 9:30 at night with the Rocky Mountains in the back, Canadian Rockies in the background. It's unbelievable to see. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. Not a big fan of the city, but I don't like most cities anymore based on the one I've lived in for a long time. So, anyway, I will just tell you this. I'm not a big fan of Storm in the Field. I understand that some of the people who attempted to get over the jump from the wall to get across the hedges and the fence may have had a little some injuries there, but I will tell you what, there's a lot of pent-up excitement that was released, whether he dropped the ball or not. Our guy made a great catch. Their guy blew a routine catch. That is what is called football. That's why you keep track of both receptions and incompletions. So it's one guy made a play and one guy didn't. So I don't have a problem with them storming the field, but I don't storm the field and never have. With one exception.
The argument as to whether or not Auburn fans should have stormed the field after a game like that is a different argument than whether or not storming the field and storming the court should be a thing in college athletics. I think it's totally understandable for all the reasons you cited, the pent-up aggression, the frustration, the 3+ years of seeing Auburn come close against ranked opponents and not seal the deal.
I was just talking in the press box, which, by the way, I decided to – Steve said for me to bring this.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Shout out to Steve Cosgrove.
But, I mean, really, have you ever seen a team play as many games close – but not win and close? And it felt like that when A&M took that 31-28 lead.
It really did.
I thought, I've never seen a team go through a season and continue to fight but come up short.
Yeah.
Huge amount of credit to the coaching staff and the players for their willingness to continue to battle all along. Mm-hmm. When we were giving up touchdowns in the second half, it would have been easy for us to say, the heck with this.
Oh, no kidding.
We're right back at it. And they never, ever gave up. What's very interesting to me, Bill, I got something else I'm going to complain about at a later date, but it has to do with drunks in Jordan-Hare Stadium now. But the people, you know where I sit. I'm in a scholarship section, and people who either sell their tickets to people on StubHub or wherever you're able to sell them like that, or people that left in the third quarter.
And there were a few. There were more than a few that left, and that was before A&M had taken the lead.
Correct. The person sitting who sits next to me all the time left. The drunk former fraternity brother of somebody that sits behind me who dog cusses everybody every play left right in the middle of the third quarter, and then his family left not too soon after. It's just, it's amazing to me. Why would you give up on that? I just don't know why would you give up on them, because they never gave up on themselves. So, you know, it's a remarkable win. And I think it says a lot about, can we win? The answer is yes. We just got to make sure that we, I think the greatest thing I've ever seen in a post-game celebration in Jordan-Hare is head coach standing up and yelling at the recruits that were over there, get here. When are you going to get here?
And Tex, you're someone who, you have hands-on experience as a college athlete. You're in a family with a lot of college athletics experience. Like, I think in an era where things can feel mercenary at times, and it can be easy to be cynical about college football and college basketball, you think about the guys that are in their fifth year at Auburn, right? Their fourth or fifth year at Auburn that played their final game at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Like, that's if you're looking for something to feel good about, if you're looking for a story that feels kind of timeless in college athletics, it's guys like Jarquez Hunter and Luke Deal,
right,
and Brandon Frazier and Tate Johnson and even transfers like Peyton Thorne and Keandre Lambert-Smith. Like, guys like that getting to go out, you know, with maybe the best moment of – I mean, maybe the best moment of Jarquez's Auburn career, right? Like, four years.
He scores three touchdowns there. I felt great for Peyton. I really did.
Yeah.
And you could see it today. I mean, he wasn't – he was himself. I mean, he was asked about that. I mean, and, you know, he talked – he said, well, you know, some people are like that, but most aren't. And he talked about being benched and what it meant and being able to come back from it. And I think he's handled himself exceptionally well through all this. And it was – hey, look, Auburn was overdue. It was very fitting for those guys to be able to go out on that night with a win.
And a bit of vindication for Hugh Freeze, in the sense that I think he had been questioned as to why he stuck with Peyton Thorne this season.
Yeah.
At different moments, people were thinking, go with somebody else. And against Texas A&M, you saw on display why Peyton Thorne gave Auburn the best chance to win, and what they believed this offense was capable of with him there at the trigger.
Yeah, and one last thing is to have a kicker that nobody's ever heard of start making field goals for us. It's just remarkable. It's a remarkable story. And one other thing, by the way, Dan, you mentioned playing sports, and my wife would tell you the exact same things, and my children would tell you the same thing, is that I learned way more from the failures and what you can do after than ever from any of the wins.
Yeah, but there have been too many of those lessons this year. That's enough is
enough. Exactly.
All right, so Tex,
we'll get on. All right, guys, take care. Bye-bye.
We're way behind. Need to get to our next break. Come on in and join us. We're at Franklin Tire here on the Monday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews as we come to you from Franklin Tire and Auto here on East University, where they have been for better than four decades. They've been taking care of folks, though, in the Auburn area for over a half century now. And they're able to do that because they do. They take care of people and their vehicles. Anything you need seen about minor, major, I mean,
what's the body shop. What's the number, Bill?
821-4572. I've called that one a few times. But not as much lately, which is partly credit to the job they do keeping the vehicles we have running. We'd love for you to join us on the show. That number is 334-321-1390. Let's talk a little basketball. As already an upset out there in Maui, Dan.
I mean, this is one of the best regular season college basketball weeks of the year, feast week, you know, for the ESPN family and networks, different tournaments, different out-of-conference showdowns, you know, a lot of big matchups, including, I mean, maybe the biggest one of the week is Auburn-Iowa State tonight in Maui with two teams in the top 24, in the top five, in both polls. But as you mentioned, an upset early in Maui, number two UConn, defending two-time national champion,
right,
bounced in overtime by Penny Hardaway and the Memphis Tigers. So Penny Hardaway's Memphis team will take on the winner of Colorado-Michigan State. That game is that the next game on?
That game starts at 4 o'clock, so it's already started.
All right, so that game's going on, but with Memphis and UConn going to overtime.
Right, so it's probably delayed. So Auburn's probably delayed, right?
Yeah, so everything might get pushed back a little bit.
So North Carolina Dayton may not start until after midnight East Coast time.
Maybe Tuesday in North Carolina.
That's
crazy. When these two teams play each
other. It'll only be 7 o'clock out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, their bodies, I wonder if their bodies feel like, yeah, it's only 7 o'clock when you're playing at what would be, you know, 12 o'clock, you know, midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning.
I wasn't playing, but calling a game at 1 a.m. Troy time on Friday night.
You prepared yourself for
that's
that.
That's true. I would be more out of place having to be somewhere at 9 a.m. But it's so Memphis will play the winner of Colorado-Michigan State on that side of the bracket. On the other side of the bracket, you've got Auburn-Iowa State playing the winner of Auburn-Iowa State playing the winner of Dayton-North Carolina in Maui. And that is these are two of the two genuine national championship contenders going at it tonight with Auburn and Iowa State. TJO has done a great job turning Iowa State into they played in the Big 12 Challenge a couple of years ago. He had Halliburton brought Iowa State in. That was a close game. He's won a lot of basketball games at Iowa State, and he's got maybe his best team this year. So that should be this should be a great matchup.
What's crazy is I mean, you really can't tell anything from them this year. They have played the worst schedule in college basketball.
Wow.
I mean, the teams they played are the worst offensively and the worst defensively. That probably has something to do with Iowa State. But, I mean, it has been, no challenge at all for them. But it's going to be a challenge. You have to feel like it's going to be a challenge for Auburn. Bruce talking about it the other day, he feels like this is the best defensive guard tandem in college basketball.
Yeah. It'll be great to see how Tahi Pettiford handles that, a big road trip, playing three straight games, going up against these highly ranked teams, highly ranked guards. But to be honest with you, I think Ty's going to handle it just fine because he's surrounded by veteran players, and to me he looks like one of Bruce Pearl's best signees of you know, his 11 years at Auburn.
Well, I just
love that kid.
The big question when you play Auburn, I mean, yes, you want to know how Auburn handles guards like the ones that Iowa State's going to do, but how are they going to handle Jani Broome? I mean, Jani Broome has turned into like one of the robots they used to send to fight Godzilla, right? I mean, this guy is
Double Double.
I mean, he's unstoppable around the basket. His 2-point field goal percentage is crazy.
Yeah.
He's automatic when he gets down.
And that's what makes Auburn so dangerous. They sag in there. They've got, I mean, the way Chaney Johnson's been playing
Incredible. At
the four, and then the wings that Auburn has with CBM and Miles Kelly and Denver when he's not playing point. I mean,
you just don't know who's going to be hot, right? And you can't focus your defense on one guy. And the other thing I like about Jani Broome is it looks to me like Auburn has found more and better ways to get him the ball inside because if he touches that ball in the paint, he's almost unstoppable.
Right.
With his
touch, with
his moves, his quickness. He is just almost automatic bucket.
Yeah, so that's coming up again, scheduled for 8 o'clock local time.
Yep, and if Auburn wins, they will play at 10 o'clock local time tomorrow.
Tomorrow night.
So, maybe want to, if Auburn wins, maybe, you know, have extra coffee or maybe an extra soft drink or something.
Yeah, check.
Boost you up a little bit.
Check in on Wings 94.3 at 7:30, and we'll find out how on schedule it is. Was there, like, 2.5 hours in between? Are they doing them in sessions?
Yeah, so there's a chance that the
second session
won't be
delayed. So actually,
there's 4 hours between.
There should be.
Right,
So there should still be plenty of time. It looks like you would think the first game of a session is going to start on time. So it'll probably start around 8 unless this second game goes into overtime.
Let me see if I can get a score on if they've started the Colorado game yet, because I know that's that. So now that game was scheduled to start a couple of minutes ago and on ESPN2, and I think they're gonna be able to get that one. I would imagine they can get that game in and get the building cleared and then get the Auburn-Iowa State game on time, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, the game has started now. You figure it's going to be over before 7. That would give them an hour to clear and let everybody back.
They have not started yet.
That's what I mean. But, right now, but if it starts in the next 15 minutes, it should be over.
Now it has started.
Oh, yeah? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes. All right, 3-3-4.
Okay, so when I said they hadn't started it yet, the ball was in the air.
4 seconds ago, yes.
They had thrown the ball in the air for the opening tip. Now it started.
And Ben Taylor says, yes, the pregame's still going to start at 7:30. That's why I said tune in to Wings at 7:30, and they'll tell you what's happened up until then. If they have to go a little long, probably not, though. Game should still tip around 8 o'clock this evening. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline. We'd love for you to join in. Lot to talk about. We'll get into the college football playoffs and the SEC and the mess that this thing is. I love it.
Oh, I love it, too.
I love it because, you know, remember preseason when there aren't 5 teams that deserve to be in the playoffs? No, there are more than 12 that feel like they've got a shot as we head into the last regular season game.
I'm a little disappointed. I mean, I think that the thing that's been the most disappointing about the conversation around the college football playoff is the willingness of people to just throw Indiana like overboard.
Out. Yeah.
Because they lost one game to Ohio State.
Well,
on
I mean,
the road to Ohio State, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, I heard Doug was all over that today. I mean, he would still love Alabama to be in. Alabama lost by 21 to a 5-5 team.
Yeah.
So I mean, don't be making a pitch for a team to be in that lost by 3 touchdowns or teams that have lost to much worse teams.
You can, you know what, if you want to say that a 3-loss SEC team has done more than if they've beaten some teams.
It's South Carolina if you're going to talk about
sure,
a 3-loss SEC team that has done something.
Sure, but if you want to cite a 3-loss SEC team and say they belong in the conversation instead of a 2-loss Big 12 team or something like that, that's one thing. Indiana, I would I think I would just think it would feel like it has to do with the Indiana brand,
right?
That it's like, oh, it's not not a traditional football power. It's a Cinderella story. It's a fluke.
You sound like Kirk Herbstreit.
Yeah, I don't think they belong out. I would.
They don't pass the look test. That's what we call it.
Yeah, I mean, I would hate to see that happen in favor of in favor and not
it's
just
be really interesting tomorrow night.
Yeah.
The rankings tomorrow night are going to be really, really interesting. We'll talk more about that when we come back. Need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us as the Drive continues from Franklin Tire.
When life throws you a curveball, ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. All right. We'll toss this one out for the audience. Floyd probably knows the answer to this. Brian was wondering, when was the first time that Auburn
stormed
the field?
Jordan-Hare Stadium field, Pat Dye Field, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean,
I remember doing that in the 80s.
Well, I can tell you what I remember. I remember Legion Field being filled with fans few times. So.
Yes.
But I'm trying to remember the first time Auburn.
Even the trips that we made to Legion Field in the 80s, I don't remember. In Auburn winning, I don't remember Auburn fans taking the field.
You don't remember after the 23-22? I do. I absolutely do.
Bow
over
victory?
The top?
See, I wasn't there then.
Okay. Yeah. All right, you said 80s. Yeah. That was the first time.
My
yes.
first one there was 86. That was Lori Tillman.
Yeah, there weren't near as many then.
Right.
Well, and more recently, I'd say that Auburn. I mean, for a long time,
Jordan-Hare Stadium.
When you were a program at Auburn's level, you didn't really see.
No, you're right.
You didn't really see fans
storming the field. Is usually when it's something that's unexpected, right, or you're a big underdog.
Now 2013. There's a field storming, and that's a perfect storm it's the most incredible ending to a college football game.
Yes.
Do you remember the wins over Florida in the 2000s?
Yeah, Auburn did not storm the field after the 06.
No, I don't remember.
Auburn
did not
storm the field in 06 after Auburn beat Tim Tebow and the eventual national champion Gators.
I'm trying to think of some of the other big games.
No, I think that's what 13. You know, the Iron Bowl field storming in 13 was the first one I think in a very long time for Auburn. I don't know the exact numbers on it, but I would imagine it was the first time in a while that the field had been stormed at Auburn, and that was a Auburn was a huge underdog in Alabama. Like
Auburn, just the incredible game.
Yeah, it was just the moment. You know, was enough, and then it almost became a, if you beat Alabama in a close game, and
right.
I mean it happened in 17, it happened in 19. It would have happened in.
Oh, it definitely would have happened last year.
It would have happened in 23. It would have happened in 21. If Auburn had found a way in overtime.
If it would have happened last year, I was in the corner of the end zone where that ball was caught. Right, there was no way I'm making it all the way back.
Brian, why didn't you run out there and
stop
the play? Worst thing they can do is they get another shot.
I mean, my media career would be over, but I'd be a hero.
No kidding, man. You are a hero. But anyway, all right, let's get I'll tell you what. Russell, if you can. I see we've got less than a minute. Let's get to Russell, but we can continue this in hour number two. Hey, Russell.
Hey, just real quick. Do you guys know the answer to this?
No.
I'm trying to come up with it.
I want to say, and this has been a long time ago for me, 2001, when Damon Duvall made that field goal against Florida and they were number one, I'm pretty sure we ran on the field.
I don't remember that.
I was a freshman in college, and I'm pretty sure we did.
So you were on the field, Russell?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I remember being on the field in 2001.
The statute of limitations made that field goal.
Yeah.
Great stuff, Russell.
I mean,
Russell,
that was like almost 25 years ago, but I'm pretty sure.
It's hard to believe it's been that long.
All right, Russell. Great stuff. All right, we're halfway done having fun here at Franklin Tire. We're back with hour number two. Stick with us.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this nice Monday. It's dark now, but I mean, it's been a nice day today, a little bit warmer than the past few days, so hope everybody doing well.
It's a lot warmer than the past few days for me, Bill.
I guess. It was, it was cool. It felt like football Saturday night over at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Did. Perfect night for football.
It ended up perfect for Auburn fans, I mean, with the four overtime win. We'd love to hear from you. We're coming to you from Franklin Tire here on East University Drive, right across from CC's, where they've been taking care of folks and their vehicles for over a half century, actually in this location for over four decades. So stop by. They've had good, obviously, folks getting their vehicles ready if they're heading on the road for the Thanksgiving holidays. But anything you've got coming up, you know, the weather's going to change. It's going to get colder and stay colder for a while. So, you know, you need to make sure that everything's in the best working condition as possible, and they can take care of it for you here at Franklin. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Hour number two of the Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Let's get to the Drive hotline, and John is up first this hour. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing fine, man.
Good to talk to you, John.
As always, I want to thank my buddies Pat and Dan at Skybar for paying for these phone calls. I'm not big of them. Couple things. Bill, do you remember back in the early 80s when Auburn figured out a way to keep Georgia from storming the field?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I was there for that one.
We were talking about the 86 game. It's like,
the fire hose game.
Yep, and that's one thing we said with Dan. It's like, well, that was done to keep people off the field. Oh, remember, Auburn used to climb the hedges in Athens when they won regularly. Everybody would come back with a piece of the Georgia hedge.
And I'm not, you know, John, I'm not necessarily advocating for fire hoses or snipers or anything like that, you know, to secure the field. But I also do, you know, I guess the worry ward in me, like, is concerned that something truly horrible is going to happen in these events.
Why don't they just dig a big moat all the way around, and anybody that tries to jump in is going to land.
Well, instead of having the track where the band marches, the band would have to get into boats. To go around.
I think that, you know, they probably could take a lot from the Roman Empire, right, as far as – I haven't seen Gladiator 2 yet.
John, but I feel like there's probably multiple things they could they could take from a bygone era of spectator
sports.
Start
from that moat?
Yeah, that's back when men were men.
Listen, I have not fact checked this. It's something I saw on Twitter/X, but somebody put up a comparison of Peyton Thorne and Jason Milroe's bat for the year. Have you seen that?
Oh, it's absolutely true, and you know close. What? It's even better for Peyton when you look at just conference games. In just
right.
conference games, Peyton's like 15 and or 17 and 5 with touchdowns. To Jalen is like 5-9. He's thrown 5 touchdowns and 9 interceptions in SEC play.
Right. Well, I just saw that today, and it's kind of shocking to see it in print. I go, all these people who've been and I'm not going to defend Peyton.
Look, Peyton hasn't
been
perfect by any means,
but
he's going to put up some numbers.
Bill Rose, the Heisman candidate a couple weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But anyway,
no mo.
I got nothing else. I just wanted to call, say hi. I'm War Eagle, and y'all keep it up.
Good hearing from you, John.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, John. Yep. Great hearing from you.
Yeah. You too.
Yep. Floyd says, we talked about these, I think. In 72, obviously, the 1760 Auburn.
In Birmingham.
Storm the field. He was thinking.
While you pull that up, can I ask Brian, because we talked about it a little bit in the first hour, but the recruiting implications from this weekend and sort of
incredible.
Like, I mean that to me is because this season Auburn made some pretty big bets around guys who were out of eligibility after this year was over, including Peyton Thorne and Jarquez Hunter and Keandre Lambert Smith. And so there was that sort of fear that even if progress was made, how sustainable is it? But with the impact that turning the corner could have on recruiting, it's a good problem to have. Like it's a situation where Auburn might be able to not only hold on to a lot of the players that you're worried about from their first year and second year class, the freshmen and sophomores,
yes.
because there's been a lot of talk over the last month plus about the portal's open to everybody, and just because someone played their freshman year or their first 2 years at a school doesn't mean they're going to finish there. You get the sense that the guys who are in the picture for next year, the guys Auburn sort of, you feel like Auburn is counting on to be part of next year's two deep. A lot of those guys you wonder if Auburn's gonna be able to stick around. And then you've got a performance like that makes it easier to go sell the eventual replacements to a Peyton Thorne or a Jarquez Hunter or a Keandre Lambert Smith on choosing Auburn. I mean, it's that had to be.
Oh yeah.
We talk about the impact on recruiting, and we talk about high schoolers, but everybody who is going to go in the portal in a couple of weeks saw that performance. They saw that game and they saw that atmosphere, and I have to imagine they're going to consider Auburn more seriously than they would have a couple of days ago.
Oh, I think you're right. And we've always said that Auburn sells itself when it comes to recruiting. The game day atmosphere is incredible. The people that support Auburn are incredible. Just stepping foot on campus, I can remember when I did it for the first time way back in 1985 and the feeling I got, and I don't think that's changed. I really don't. And then all it took was bringing in a head coach and a staff that really were able to grind and to really build those relationships, and that's what's happening now. And they're getting these top kids on campus as sophomores and juniors, and they're making these great impressions on them. They're seeing games like that, and like I mentioned earlier in the show, the recruits in the recruiting section were some of the first ones on the field after that game ended last night. They had a tremendous game. I think Auburn solidified itself with some guys who already committed but were maybe still looking at other schools. Like a Jared Smith, like a Deuce Knight, who was here. And I think some other guys like Naheem Offord, one of the top quarterbacks in the country, five-star. Mm-hmm. It's really made such a strong push for him. He's from in-state. He's been committed to Ohio State for a while now. But, I would not be surprised if Auburn was able to flip him on signing day. And I think there are some others out there, a couple others that Auburn may be able to turn here in the next 9 days.
Yeah, there are a couple of guys committed to other schools as well in this conference.
Yes.
I think that Auburn's got a shot at. Yes. Let's get back to the Drive hotline, and Jack is up next. Hey, Jack.
Hello, Jack.
Hey, Bill, Dan, Brian. good talking to you guys. I totally agree with Brian. I think a lot of, you know, these guys, these recruits, have, you know, they love Auburn and they want to be here, but they just kind of needed that last minute assurance or that reason, you know, that experience mm-hmm. to know that they're making the right decision. And hopefully that game put Auburn over the top with guys like Deuce Knight, for example. But something I wanted to comment on and point out, you know, the most amazing thing, the most remarkable thing about that game, what Auburn had to overcome, was probably the second overtime period when you've got the no call on an obvious hold or interference on Lambert Smith, and then the horrible offensive pass interference that was called on
us. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean you know, I understand when there's a pick play, but that was not. I mean, Rivaldo Fairweather wasn't trying to block anybody. He was trying to run a pattern, and just because the A&M defensive backs got mixed up, I mean, that was a terrible call. Auburn has first and goal, and they're about to win the game there.
I feel like I've seen officials more eager to call the offensive pass interference on the pick play this season than in years past.
Right.
I wonder if there was a directive in the offseason to look at that. And in that spirit of –
especially with a game on the line, it seems like late in ball games or at that time in overtime, it seems like they're looking for
Is this
that.
All because of that Clemson pick play in the national championship
Probably.
Game a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
You know, that's a really effective short yardage play if you want
to – Alabama was really good at it year long.
Alabama was great at it. You're right. And so that one didn't shock me as much as the missed call on the Lambert Smith. I thought that was that's one that's called – so often that it was shocking not to see the flag come out.
It looked almost like he had his hand inside Lambert Smith's shoulder pads.
It almost looked like it was horse collaring all the way down the field.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But anyway, I'm going to come back to this eventually. But y'all talked about, you know, the three lost SEC teams that would be most deserving to get in right now, and I agree with y'all. I think my pick would be South Carolina because they're the one team. You know, you look at their overall body of work, and, you know, you can say that they've definitely improved over the course of the season and are playing some elite ball right now. But I think it's worth mentioning. I looked this up today, and you remember South Carolina's first loss of the season. It was back in September to LSU, right? And you remember a controversial play in that game where South Carolina had a pick six that would have put the game away.
Oh, yes.
But it got called back because of a hit on the quarterback.
Yep.
Who was
a
defender? Who was
a
defensive player at the time?
The crew that called that game was the exact same crew that called the Auburn Texas A&M game Saturday night. And you saw what we just talked about with those calls in the overtime. But anyway, I just found that interesting.
No, that's a great point.
That.
Thank you for that. And I would say the other thing helping South Carolina is that they have a game against a top 12 team.
They do. Like, and,
I mean,
and
they can beat Clemson.
They're at Clemson on the road, too.
And the other thing that in basketball is always important is what are you doing down the stretch? South Carolina's on a 5-game winning streak. They can close it out with another win over a ranked team and give them 6 straight wins to close the season. If anybody is deserving from this league with 3 losses, it's South Carolina.
Now, Ole Miss, look at their
other loss. I mean, they were an eyelash away from being able to send Alabama to overtime or beat them.
Right, and then Ole Miss beat them handily at South Carolina.
I was going to say if Ole Miss and South Carolina are both 9-3, Ole Miss would be able to say we beat that team by 25 points. And that should account for something.
But Ole Miss ends up losing to a couple of teams that. Sure. Are not nearly as competitive.
I know, but imagine how that would play in Auburn.
So
right?
you're the committee that doesn't – strength of schedule doesn't matter.
No,
remember,
I don't.
That's what the CFP was saying last week. Basically, strength of schedule doesn't matter. It's close losses are more important.
I have no idea what
– makeup stuff.
Yeah, I have no idea what the committee is – I have no idea what the committee is going to prioritize. The Florida State thing last year has sort of – you know what I mean? Like that to me has given me a lack of faith in – you know, the logic behind these decisions. I think they're probably gonna get it something close to right, but boy, you're gonna have a couple of teams.
Oh, there's no question. Wondering
why they got left out and team A or team B got in.
Mm-hmm. All right, tell you what, we'll go ahead. You still with us, Jack?
Yeah, I'm here. Just one more comment, and y'all can discuss this when y'all come back for break, and I'll just listen. It's been suggested on social media, you know, going back, you know, what we just talked about in the South Carolina LSU game. That you start holding officials more accountable for these calls, and you start, you know, you give them a bump in pay, but you also make them, you know, have to face the media after the game and have to take questions, that sort of stuff. Just love to hear your thoughts on that and Always good to talk to you guys, and y'all have a blessed Thanksgiving.
Great hearing from you, Jack. I've been a proponent of that for years. I mean, let them take a few questions after a game. I mean, if there are questionable calls, let them explain it. Or if they, I mean, but that's the way it is with officials in every sport. Yeah. None of them have to face, you know, yeah, the media.
And I wonder if that would really impact, you know, what happens on the field all that often. You know, what
I don't
mean?
Know, but like, it'd make fans at least, you know, either feel better or worse.
Yeah, I mean, if
go, well, okay, I understand, or like, what an idiot.
Yeah, if anything, it would be, you know, a weekly address from the director of officials from the conference or something,
yes,
you know, would be, you know, get them on the...
Oh, that would be good.
Get them on the media
at
call.
Least something like
get
that.
Get them on the media call on Wednesday or something. I mean, I don't think
that'd
be...
That would be...
Yeah, what about that call in such and such game? Yeah. You know, sure.
We blew that one.
So we don't have to wait until media days to ask? You know, we have to file it away and then say, all right, well in July, I'm going to ask about South Carolina.
Yeah, because by then you forget about some of those. Yeah. Like, and that's what they hope, I guess. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. We're coming to you from Franklin Tire here on the Monday Drive. Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, where it's great having Brian on Mondays, the same day as his musings come out. And, well, we talked about Brian's football comments right when Dan got here, because Brian penned his thoughts on the post-game celebration.
Let the kids have fun. That's my opinion. And let's they're going to storm the field. I just don't think there's a way to stop it necessarily.
You've forgotten those hoses that we talked
about.
Yeah,
I know.
Well, the one that, I mean, the...
But I think didn't Auburn get in trouble for that back in the day?
Just with the Georgia folks.
Oh, okay.
The argument that bothered me, and this is, you know, I was absolutely not in the camp of, oh, well, Auburn has too much tradition and history as a program to be storming the field after a 15, after a win over. Like, I get the people who are on that side, right? The people are, you know, that Auburn has beaten top 10 teams
not
and
recently.
Top 5 teams. You're right.
Not recently.
I think Ole Miss was 10 when Auburn beat them back in 21. But it's still, it's been, and it's also, I think, the way the game ends matters, right? If Auburn beats Texas A&M 35-3, and the second half isn't very competitive.
Probably not. You're right.
I'm not sure. You know, if the game continues the way it started.
But when you had a 21-0 lead and then you're behind 31-28 with two minutes to go in the game.
No.
And it ends up going four overtimes. It's like, oh, please, God, win this game. Get it over with. Oh, yes. You know, I showed Brian the video of Kennedy. Kennedy was still up and going.
Yeah.
Atta girl. I'm telling you. Hey, Sarah made her first game. And they left at halftime.
Wow!
I told Scott maybe Sarah needed to stay. The way things were going there in the second half for a while. She was a day short of being 7 weeks old at her first game on Saturday night. All right, let's get back to the Drive hotline. And Yellowhammer is up next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. I got a quick one here. Georgia, I hear, has been declared one of the teams in the SEC championship game, and I was just wondering, do they decide the opponent on the divisional basis or some new way of doing that?
There is no division anymore.
They used to decide the opponent on
the top two.
Yeah, they used to have two divisions, and the division champions would play each other in the SEC championship game. They've gotten rid of the divisions with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma to the league. They're going to take the two teams with the best conference records, and then you have to get into tiebreakers if you have multiple teams.
And you don't need tiebreakers this time because Georgia is 6-2.
Right. They're done.
And the only teams that could be tied with them would be Tennessee, who they beat head-to-head, so they have the tiebreaker over, and Texas A&M. And if it's Texas A&M, Texas A&M has beaten Texas, so they're in.
Right.
So Georgia is already in because they have the tiebreaker over Tennessee. And the winner of the Texas-Texas A&M game, if it's Texas, they'll be the only team in the league with one loss. If it's Texas A&M, they would have that win over Texas, which would put them in.
Now, you could have a four-way tie at the top, you know, for the regular season championship in Texas, Georgia, A&M, and Tennessee. Could all be, or no, I guess Texas would need to lose, right?
Yeah, if Texas A&M beats Texas, you'd have a four-way tie. But Georgia's two and 0 head-to-head.
What happens if all four teams are 6-2? Do we know who's playing Georgia?
Yeah,
that's
then the winner of Texas A&M.
So Tennessee's out.
Tennessee is out. Tennessee right now is in pretty good shape to be the third team in the college football playoffs.
As long as they beat Vanderbilt.
If they beat Vandy, because they'll be a two-loss team.
That's in Nashville, I believe.
Yes.
Yep.
It's too early to call who the opponent would
so
be.
It's Georgia versus the winner of Texas A&M.
Yeah, so we know
it's a Texas team.
Right.
Yeah, Georgia has finished conference play. Georgia's got Georgia Tech this week. Georgia is 6-2. They are in.
Yes.
The question is Tennessee, even Tennessee could get to 6-2, but Tennessee is out, as Bill just explained. The winner of the Texas A&M game in College Station this weekend will be Georgia's opponent in the SEC championship game.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thanks.
It could have been a whole lot messier for the SEC. It really could have.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, had Alabama and Ole Miss not lost Saturday.
Oh, it's going to be crazy.
And A&M.
Well, but even with A&M, if A&M beat Texas and Alabama and Ole Miss had won, you could have six teams with two losses.
That'd have been incredible.
So that would have been a mess. So, actually, Auburn and Florida helped the SEC out.
And we mentioned that South Carolina game a couple of times against LSU.
Right.
That's the game keeping South Carolina from a 6-2 SEC record right now, which is remarkable to think about with the way their season got started.
Think about how fortunate LSU is to be where they are. I mean,
they don't seem fortunate, right? Well, I mean, they don't sound.
They're a 7-4 team. That, I mean, they got by Vandy this past week, 24-17. The Ole Miss led them the entire game. Yep. LSU tied it at the end, then won it in overtime.
South Carolina.
Yep. That's what I mean. LSU, I said this a couple of weeks ago, LSU could be right where Auburn was, but they had won a couple of those ball games, and Auburn had lost them.
What's the approval rating for Kelly these days?
It's going
not
down.
Very
down
high.
Like, is that now?
You think a 24? You think a 7-point win over Vandy really jacked that up a whole lot?
Is he someone? Is he definitely back next year?
He's got a $60 million buyout.
Yeah,
$60 million buyout.
I mean, I wonder if you would almost need another program to step in and say we would take Brian Kelly and make it easier for the transition. Like, I wonder if he would need a soft landing spot in order for everybody to agree, because it just feels like if they don't make a move, a year of bad vibes. Like, I mean, sort of that, you know, yeah, coming out of the season.
It goes down to 50 after next year. I mean, you know what, there's probably got to be coaches all across the country going, hey, somebody hire Scott Woodward as an AD and let him hire me. Woodward is the guy who paid Jimbo.
Yeah.
Hired Jimbo with that contract, and now Brian Kelly with
big.
This one.
Yeah.
I mean, he's $150 million in buyouts.
Wow.
Oh, man.
And you know what, not that this is entirely Brian Kelly's fault either, but it's not as though Notre Dame fell off a cliff without him.
No, you're right.
10-1.
I think a lot of people thought, oh, Marcus Freeman's going to struggle this year. Notre Dame looks pretty good. I mean, I thought Army could be competitive with them, and boy, was I wrong on that.
No, I think when Notre Dame – and so Notre Dame looks like they will host a playoff game. They're going to be one, you know, 5-8. You know, one of those games is going to be at Notre Dame. I wonder – yeah, see, I'd heard
– Texas texts us that they were chanting fire Coach Kelly in Tiger Stadium Saturday.
Yeah.
So right now LSU is 6th nationally in recruiting, but they're 5th in the SEC. That's amazing if you think about that. Yeah. It really is.
Well, you wonder if they'll be able to hang on to all these guys too.
Yeah. It's going to be crazy these last 9 days.
But I want to see that game. I mean, look, we're going to have some really fascinating matchups in the college football playoff regardless of how this shakes out. I want to see – you know, it's probably
– LSU. You think LSU is going to be – you think it'll be an easy win for them over Oklahoma this week?
I don't know. I mean, Oklahoma just played their best game of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, I am a little nervous about, like, these – so in the case of Florida –
when you win a huge game at home and then you go on the road,
in the case of Florida, Auburn, and Oklahoma,
right.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if they had a huge letdown this week because of how emotional those games were and how – they almost felt like season-ending win.
I don't see Florida having a big letdown.
That's well,
State.
Florida's moved up to 19th in recruiting. They were in the 40s and 50s for most of the year.
Yeah, Florida finds themselves huge favorites in Tallahassee against against that situation.
Against a Florida State team that has quit. They have absolutely quit. All right, let's get one more call in before our bottom of the hour break. Jeremy is up next.
Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, hey guys. Dan, good to have you back, man.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Jeremy.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Dan. Hey, I'm going to be the Debbie Downer and just tell you 12 teams is too many. There are only about 5 or 6 teams that we need in a playoff this year. We said that's what we were going to have, guys.
Oh, I love it, though, Jeremy.
This would be one of the messier four-game playoffs, though.
But you know what's going to happen is one of those teams you don't think deserves to be in there is going to knock off one of those four or five that ought to be in there.
I'm generally a smaller tent guy when it comes to postseasons. I'm adamantly opposed to building, you know, I think the NCAA tournament probably has the right number. In basketball, I don't think they need more play-in games or more teams in. I know it feels inevitable that we're going to get to 14 or maybe even 16 in college football. But I want to see how this 12 team playoff goes. I think it's
probably a discussion for another day. But I do not want this year's South Carolina team anywhere near a national championship.
Why?
I don't want them there. I don't want Alabama because they just don't deserve it, man. You only get so many shots in college football. You're not playing 16 games.
Why is college football
got
to be different than all the other ones, though? Why does it not matter that a team hot down the stretch can't contend?
I see Jeremy's point on a 9-3 team making the college football playoff does take a little bit of the sting out of the regular season, because if you're you win 75% of your games in the regular season and you're one of the 12 teams included. Like I get that.
Jeremy, do you care about the NFL?
There's too many teams. Like, I hate the wild cards. Like, win your division.
Okay,
like,
I was going to say, wild cards won the Super Bowl. I mean, you know.
What would a four-team playoff look like this year if chalk holds? Oregon could be.
Well, you wouldn't have automatic conference champs to be dealing with.
Well, you wouldn't have an automatic, but I mean, let's
just Oregon and Ohio State are probably in automatic.
Yeah, I think so.
What happens in the Big Two?
I do want to get to this past Saturday's game because I was in there with my 10-year-old, 6-year-old, and 3-year-old for the entire game.
Wow.
Yeah, and had to lug the 3-year-old out from about the fourth quarter on. She passed out, and even with all the noise, slept through all of it somehow.
Oh, man.
Not a real fan. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, Jeremy. No, I mean, that's it.
The drunks were bad Saturday. I agree with Tex. They were all around us, and it was awful. I want a message to get out to Auburn fans. Be better. Like they were awful.
Have you noticed a difference since alcohol was sold in the stadium with something like this? Because that's a new development over the last two, three years.
I have heard that as well.
And that's something keep in mind. I mean, there hasn't been an incident that would raise that to get to this level. We talked about this when Texas was throwing stuff on the field during the Georgia game earlier this year. One thing the conference could do, the conference has the right to suspend alcohol sales in a stadium.
Yeah.
They can revoke that privilege from you. But not that there was anything. Yeah, we'll go ahead, Jeremy.
Listen, I haven't noticed a whole lot of, like, sheriff's deputies up in the stands breaking up fights or anything like that. But there have been more episodes that seemed like Georgia fans all year on the regular than you would normally have. Georgia games, I've always seen those type people. For whatever reason or another, it has felt like every ball game, there are just more of them. But that aside, I tell you what, play of the game to me, as poorly as Oscar Chapman punted the ball Saturday night, his hold on the tying field goal was amazing. That snap wasn't good.
Was not good. No, you're right.
Yeah.
High.
Oscar had a tough night punting, but that was a huge play.
I thought at least one time he slipped on a punt.
He looked like he almost pooch kicked the last one. I couldn't really tell what was
going
on.
Whatever happened to his punting Saturday night, I mean, that was by far the worst game he's ever punted. That hold saved the game.
Yes, it did.
That's a great
option.
Props to your holder, but.
No, that's what I was about to say, that Jeremy. That you don't hear, like, I think the whole game of inches stuff about football. You don't hear about, I mean, it's a snap or a hold.
You hear more about the snap than you just take the hold for granted.
And you're right. That was a play that did not start in a promising fashion.
Those guys they make something that is not routine. Like the process of catching a snap and putting it down in a particular place. For a particular kicker who may like the ball tilted one way a little more than the other, guys, it is not a routine thing to do. And the fact that Oscar got that thing down for that kid to hit that was probably the most impressive thing he's done in an Auburn uniform.
I don't disagree with that. That's a great observation, Jeremy.
Hi, guys.
Good to hear from you, man. Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, Jeremy.
And a reminder that the drive, we will take Thanksgiving Day off. But that's it. I mean, it is Iron Bowl week, so yeah. we'll be on every other day this week, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Friday.
Can't promise the same for Christmas. We'll probably take some more time off towards the end of December. But, no, this week with the Iron Bowl, and you know, we're going to be recapping a pretty big basketball game tomorrow as well.
Yes, we will.
I mean, Auburn and Iowa State tonight on ESPNU, by the way, for folks. I mean, the game on, I guess, is it because of Monday Night Football they got the Peyton and Eli?
Yes.
That's probably on ESPN2 mm-hmm. tonight, and so that's mm-hmm. why the Auburn-Iowa State game is on the U, because the Colorado-Michigan State game that's going on right now is on ESPN2. So I'm thinking they're gonna go from that to
Monday Night Football.
They're gonna go that to the Monday Night Football coverage, and then and Auburn-Iowa State, a huge regular season college basketball game. I think Auburn-Houston was on ESPN2 as well.
Yeah,
so
that's,
you know,
right.
a couple of huge Auburn games.
Auburn hopes that continues. I mean, they'll take the same result right now. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in.
We got a score in that Michigan State game as well, as as they're about to go to the half. Michigan State leading Colorado by 13.
Yep. 38-25.
Tell you what, you don't need to know anything about Michigan State's roster, do you?
No.
To be like, you know, they're probably going to be pretty good.
As long as the same guys over there on the bench, you got a feeling it's going to be about the same. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in here in the final 20 minutes of the Monday Drive.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday evening. Bill, Dan, and Brian, we're at Franklin Tire. Again, they're open tomorrow and Wednesday, then closed for the rest of the week. For Thanksgiving, they'll be open again next Monday. And we were just talking here during the break. We had a chance to get with quite a few players today, as well as Hugh Freeze. I was there for a few of them. I was not around when DeMarcus Riddick came. I left before that. I had to get a couple of things taken care of. DeMarcus Riddick's quotes have become very popular this afternoon, Brian.
They really have. And we talked to a number of young guys today. Cam Coleman had some interesting things to say too. But DeMarcus was asked about Ryan Williams, and he said, Ryan Williams is Ryan Williams. Yeah, great quote. That's true. Yeah, he's electric and this and that, but in my eyes, he ain't really nobody to me. Ryan Williams is himself. He ain't no big-time player to me. That'll probably get talked about over there, I'm sure.
Talked about Jalen Milroe a little bit, too.
And then he also said –
probably.
And this was in regards to, I think, just talking about the rivalry, but I remember it was that question. But I would say seeing the results after that game, it was kind of like this team is really beatable, and I was just telling the team, y'all don't really take this team as this or that. They're really beatable. We've got something to fight for. Going into this game, I'm just going to be balls to the wall every time. Like I said, Bama is a big rival team. Every rival team I've never lost to, and I will not lose to Bama while I'm here.
And that's the one that, especially the I will not lose to Bama while I'm here.
All right.
So
let me just say, DeMarcus Riddick is one of the best young players to come through Auburn.
He absolutely is.
In a while. He is a superstar in the making, and if that's what DeMarcus Riddick says, I'm not going to argue with him. We'll just see how it turns out.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Back to the phones, and Matt is up next. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. If y'all could just keep me on until you get the question answered, because I'm down here in Smith Station trying to get back to where I could pick y'all up on the radio and hear the answer. But anyway, I got just two questions on tonight's game. First question is there any breaking news on the basketball team? Is anybody out? Anybody sick? Any unforeseen,
Okay, first question. My understanding is the whole team's in Maui. I've seen some pictures from the banquet and stuff.
Yep.
That would include Ja'Kai Howard and Turtle Hudson,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Bruce told us the other day that they were on the trip. They are available, so
yes.
I would assume that we'll see the same sort of rotation we saw before they were out.
Correct me if I'm wrong. We have not seen either of those guys since.
No, it's interesting.
They didn't dress out the first game. They've dressed out the last
Well, it's progressed. They weren't there the first game.
Right. That's right.
They were there in warm-ups and sat next to each other the right. second game. And last
game three.
They were dressed out but just sat together on right. the bench. So it's like you could see them progressing.
And if they can get them back at some point, it could be very helpful because that'll make Auburn one of the deepest teams out there. You're playing three games in 3 days
yep.
in November. That's a big test for any team. So a team like Auburn, if they can use all their depth pieces, would be a big plus.
Gotcha. And the second question is, how does Auburn match up with this Iowa State team? Is this like Houston 2.0, or is this a better Houston? Or you know, and being out there in Hawaii, yeah. what do y'all think?
We may be proven different, you know, wrong here early in the season. But, you know, I think Houston was bigger and more physical than Iowa State. I think Iowa State has really good guards that's going to really pressure and put a lot of make it a lot tough on Auburn's guards. But I think Auburn guards in turn are going to do the same to them. So I think that's going to be a great matchup to watch. And I think Auburn definitely has an advantage inside with their size, their length, their physicality, their depth. I think that's where Auburn can win this game. If Auburn doesn't dominate the rebounding and the points in the paint, I'll be very surprised.
I know we've got some veterans on our team. Does Iowa State have, like, a seasoned veteran team like Auburn?
Their guards yes. are very experienced. Lipsy and
Gilbert
are both seniors who've yep. played – well, actually, Lipsy's just a junior, but they played a lot of basketball together. So their guards are extremely experienced. I think in the front court they don't have as much experience. I mean – they've got a few guys. They're more experienced than a lot of teams. But Auburn, I don't think you're going to find a team that Auburn's going to face that you feel like has more experience than Auburn does with nine guys in the rotation who are seniors.
And not like not overwhelming size or anything from these guys. I mean, I think Gilbert the Gilbert Denver Jones matchup will be really interesting when he's got the ball. That's a UNLV transfer in his second year at a major conference school. Denver Jones, FIU player in his second year at a major conference school. But I think with Lipsy and Gilbert, it's just they do a great job avoiding turnovers. They do a great job sort of wearing a defense down
get to the foul line too, which can be a problem. Auburn's got to guard without fouling, so that's going to be a big part of this game for Auburn.
And a trademark of TJO's teams, the head coach at Iowa State. I mean, they don't take bad shots. Like they are an incredibly they will run the shot clock down to one or two rather than take an ill advised shot. And that's something Auburn's defense is going to have to be on their toes the whole possession. And if they can do that enough, I think Auburn's got a great shot to win this game.
You know, that's something that they haven't – sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, finish answering. I got one more question for y'all. Hang up.
Okay.
Go ahead,
I was going to say they're similar to Auburn in that they have five guys averaging double figures and another, their starting center, averages 9.3. So they got six guys that average 9 points or better. So that's something that's going to be similar to what Auburn has with all the different, possibilities of guys scoring.
Well, I guess a twofold question, and then I'll quit asking you. But under Bruce Pearl, has Auburn ever played that far out, like out in Hawaii, and how have they fared if they have?
This is the second time they've been the Maui Invitational, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how they did the last time. I don't think it was a great trip.
No, it wasn't. I mean, and Bruce pointed out only two SEC teams have ever won Maui.
They've taken international trips not to play D1 basketball. You remember a couple of years ago they went to Israel. They've been to Europe.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Auburn was in the is it next year Auburn's in the battle for Atlantis?
Didn't they go – they went to Alaska and played one of those too, didn't they?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know the men's.
Alaska.
Yeah, men's basketball. I think they pulled the plug on that. But they have
been to Hawaii with Bruce, and they and like Dan said, they've gone international.
West Coast trips too. They played at Washington. Mm-hmm. They played at USC. So I think it's part of probably. I would say this is probably as far from Auburn as they've played a regular season game. It's tough to get that kind of mileage staying in the 48.
Yeah.
But it's
they've been to the Caribbean, right? There's a game.
Yep.
There's some games down there.
They were in the battle for Atlantis in 21.
Yeah, my concern is just that far away. How many fans will we have there? I mean, if it's in the States, I feel like we could bring some fans. But I'm just I'm worried about being way out there in the time.
It's like that for every team,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
I just have a feeling Auburn's going to have as many or more fans than Iowa State will.
Yeah, I don't know what the crowds are going to be like. I know the tickets are eye popping. As far as if you wanted to, if you were in Maui right now and you wanted to go on the secondary market and go get some tickets to tonight's game, I think it's $600-700.
Wow,
was the number I saw. On the secondary market. Our buddy Justin Ferguson's credentialed. He's going to be in the house for that game. We'll talk to him at some point this week, Bill. We might get a dispatch in from Justin Ferguson out on the island. I think it's going to be. That's one of the things about tournament basketball, though, is you don't get. It's rare to have, unless there's a host team participating, it's rare to have a really overwhelming home court advantage from anybody.
Well, all right, guys, maybe we'll pull it out. Y'all got a good feeling? You think we match up good?
I do. I mean, I do. I like the matchup. We'll see. I mean, I love the, you know, how many threats Auburn has other than Janai Broome. If they try to, keep the ball away from Janai inside. Also, I love the way that Auburn has moved the basketball this year. They've been very unselfish, willing to make that extra pass.
And I would think that just like with the Houston game, win or lose, a highly competitive game is a good sign because this is a team that a lot of people think can make the Final Four in Iowa State. So just like with Houston, if you're able to go punch for punch with them for 40 minutes, it's a sign that you're every bit as dangerous as they are. And if you actually win the game, then it's all the more impressive.
Auburn's already got one of the best wins in the country in Houston, at Houston, or in the city of Houston. And if they can go beat another five team in the Maui, that's just another big notch. And that'll really be a big boost to what they're trying to get done once we get into March.
I wonder if Penny Hardaway and Memphis now have one of the best wins anybody has all season long, beating UConn in Maui to start the action today. Appreciate it. Great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. As I look at the stats, I hadn't looked at Iowa State stats. Again, they played a ridiculously easy schedule at this point.
Is it three or four totally overmatched opponents? Yeah, 3-0 and 3.
None of whom are ranked in the top 300. They have played 9 players double-figure minutes a game. And we're talking about the size. Well, they do go 6'10", 6'9", and 3 guards, and they're – one of their top 5 scorers is a 6'8 guy off the bench. So they have some size.
Yeah, I was thinking more in the backcourt. Gilbert and Lipsy and Jones, who's having a strong start to the season. Those
guys, leading scorer, Chris
but those guys aren't huge guards. No, they're not small.
No, but they're not as tall as either, you know, CBM or Miles Kelly on the wing.
But no, they got some big dudes inside. Is it the is it the fella from
actually
he's from Wisconsin.
Tyshawn Jackson is their starting center, but
Momcilovic
is he's the guy that comes off the bench at 6'9" and Jefferson 6'8".
Big block shot guys. I guess the Jefferson guy gets some, but yeah.
And against 3 terrible teams thus far. All right, we need to get to our final break of the show. Stick with us as we continue from Franklin Tire here on the Monday Drive.